Thanks for tuning in today to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today we're going to talk a little about corn soil insecticides. We're also going to talk just a little about the grain markets. We've got a lot of questions already coming in the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Before we do, I was talking to a young guy this morning, and I just said, above all, when you're looking for what you want to get into with your line of work, whether you want to go back to the farm or you want to do something else, you have to be passionate about whatever it is. There's an agronomist that I work with, and I talk to him about every year, and he goes, you know, Brian, I haven't had to work a day in the last 20 years. And I go, what do you mean? You work all the time. And he goes, no. I love what I do so much. I'm just so excited to get up every morning and go do this. I don't consider it work at all. I'm just going out having fun every single day. And that's the way it needs to be. If you're not passionate about whatever you're doing, find something you are passionate about. And the other thing that I would say along those lines, especially when you're young and you're just getting started, everything is going to be at least a little bit of a challenge. You got to stick with some of the things. If you think there's a good future there, you think it's something you're going to be excited about, you got to stay with it a little bit. It's even like for me as an agronomist, I'm more excited today than I've ever been. And I remember when I was 22, 23, 24, and I'm kind of feeling my way out, and I'm still getting plenty of questions where I go, boy, I don't know the answer to that. I don't have enough experience, and I'm trying to learn and everything else. But every year, I learn more, and I get more excited because there are so many things we can do on the farm and so many things for us as agronomists we can do to help farmers. It's amazing. And also, I get excited because I see so many horrible recommendations out there, so many people getting misled down the wrong path, trying to get sold something by a company that just wants to sell product instead of doing the right thing for the farmer. That's what I am most passionate about, that there is a way that we can all farm and work together so we can do not just a good job in terms of yield, but a good job in terms of producing more profit and improving the land while we're at it. All right, so let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag here.
It's the mailbag!
All right, the first question comes from Gordon. And he says, hi guys, I'd be interested to hear your comments on the article that I'm sending you from University of Minnesota. It's entitled Timely Tips for Soybean Nutrient Management. And he says, I circled one sentence from item number one that I'd like to hear your opinion on. And also, I'd appreciate your comments on item number two, keeping the application of potash low. All right, so with this particular article, the first one and what he circled is, it says in this article, for nutrients like sulfur, research has shown a greater benefit of applying ahead of the previous crop versus directly ahead of the soybean crop. Now, let me preface this by saying this is an article out of the state of Minnesota, where they're dealing with more heavy soils, not a tremendous amount of rainfall, and really cold temperatures. So when we start talking about sulfur, keep in mind it's leachable. It's roughly half as leachable as nitrate. So, you know, it's not like super leachable or anything. But nevertheless, let's say you're in Alabama and you've got sandy soil. You get a tremendous amount of rain. You have heat. You know, I'm going to call it year-round, but you have growing conditions almost year-round. That's an entirely different situation. So the whole thing is, we talk often about how soybeans respond better to what's in the soil already as opposed to applied fertility in a lot of cases. Part of the reason why that is because soybeans have such a tiny little root system. Think about the average corn plant. It has roughly 5 times the root mass of soybeans. 5 times the root mass of soybeans. It's funny, too. I often hear people talk about, you know, soybeans are a good scavenger crop. And I go, a scavenger crop? Are you kidding me? Soybeans aren't a good scavenger crop. Think about corn. It's got 5 times the root mass. I mean, if I knew absolutely nothing about farming, I'm going to pick the crop that's got 5 times the root mass to be the scavenger as opposed to the one that has 1/5 the root mass. So anyway, you know, the big thing here is it's placement. That's the whole thing. So if you're broadcasting sulfur, you get no rain and you have heavy soil, even though, yeah, it is leachable, it's still not moving down into the root zone enough. And so that's part of the reason why we see better results in our cold, heavy soils when it gets on early. Okay, so that answers that question. The next one is keep the application rate of potash low. So in their little article here, it says if K is low or very low, it may be best to apply higher rates ahead of a pre-seeding crop and limit any application ahead of the soybean crop to no more than 100 pounds of potash per acre. The reason for yield decreases is not completely clear, but maybe due to chloride applied with the potash. Yes, it is possible that if you get enough chloride out right in front of soybean planting, that you could possibly limit nodulation. We've known that for years. However, I will say we've done enormously high rates of potash in front of soybeans and have not hurt yield. So, you know, it's really going to vary depending on moisture, soil type, all those types of things. But I just say this, if you're terribly low on potassium, don't think, well, I'm going to wait another year before I put potassium on because I'm planting soybeans this year. No. Look at how much potassium soybeans need. It is a crazy amount. And what the crop removes, a big soybean crop, is going to take way more than a big corn crop even. And I know it doesn't seem right, but I'm talking grain removal only. There's a lot that's going to leave that field in the soybean year. So potassium, in many cases, that is the number one major nutrient that we see limiting yields across the United States and Canada. We've got to make sure we've got plenty of potassium in the soil. Now, if I own the ground, I'm all for this recommendation where, yep, I'm going to put some out 2 years in advance, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 8 years, 20 years. Okay, no big deal if I own the ground. But if I don't own the ground, let's say I'm renting this ground, I don't know if I'm going to have it next year. I can't follow that advice. Then I'm going to do a lot more banding. Yeah, I'm going to keep my rates relatively low, but I'm going to use a little bit of dry. I'm going to use a fair amount of liquid also because the liquid's more available right now. And again, in cold, heavy soils where the potash isn't going to break down fast, that's where we really see liquid potassium sources paying. All right, well, today on the show, we're going to talk more about corn soil insecticides. We'll get to that and more right after this.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Before we get to corn soil insecticides and more of your questions and phone calls, we're going to talk grain markets just a little bit with our good friend Scott Harms. So Scott, just I'm going to say, I think it was Friday night. I'm just about to go to bed, and I get a report at, no, maybe it's Saturday night, at like 9 p.m. Yeah, I'm just looking here on my phone. It's 9 p.m. on Saturday night, and I start getting reports about, hey, President Trump and the President of China, they're meeting, and apparently things are going pretty good, but, you know, the markets haven't necessarily reflected any huge uptick, so what exactly happened, and what do you know about all this?
Yeah, well, it was probably the most talked about dinner meeting we've had in a long time, for sure, and no question we knew there was going to be some kind of information, vital market information available to the markets on Sunday night. It was going to happen over the weekend, whether it was a good meeting or a bad meeting. It was a productive meeting. It resulted in a pause of any additional new U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods, and they're going to plan for some intense trade talks here, whatever that means. And in exchange, China has pledged to buy a substantial amount of agricultural energy products, some industrial products. Now, the trouble is, in a world where we get our information from tweets and we get anecdotal comments from different people in the administration, it's really about the best we can do for now. There's a lot of uncertainty. There is going to be a 90-day window of negotiation that's already started. The clock's ticking. And at this point, the Chinese tariffs on U.S. ag products have not been removed. So there continues to be a barrier for the private Chinese importers to buy U.S. products. But it is believed that the Chinese government, which is not affected by the tariffs, that they may make a substantial purchase here in the short term to replace some government stock. So I think the market reaction was probably expectedly favorable, but guarded. I mean, we've got a lot of things we have to sort through. It's an ongoing process. Soybean prices soared overnight, on the Sunday night trade, but they couldn't hold on to those strong gains, but there was some nice follow through today. So I think the market is carrying a level of optimism, and it's been a long time since we've had some positive news on the trade front. So I think they're willing to give the benefit of the doubt, but we need to see some more concrete evidence that a deal is going to be done before too long, and the market may become impatient.
All right. So one of the things we talk about all the time with Grain PhD is just overall market education and trying to help farmers just establish a good market plan. But that's kind of challenging when you've got our number one importer of our products not necessarily agreeing with what we're after here. So what should we be looking for in kind of both the near term and maybe the medium term from a price perspective?
Well, I think you have to market based on the current fundamentals that we have, knowing that there's always going to be an opportunity to adjust if need be. Regardless of the Chinese tariffs, and this is something we have to remember and remain focused on, we still did produce a huge crop this year. We still have a very sizable carryover figure, even if China becomes more of a factor, becomes a factor on our export market. So we have to market as if there's a large carryover and put your price parameters and your plan in place based on what we know today. And again, one of the huge benefits of having a futures and options part of your marketing plan is that flexibility. If something would come down the road, just as we deal with changes in the summertime with weather, or we deal with planting problems. If we feel like we need to adjust to something, we can. But I think it's important to, this is a good opportunity. The market has gotten a breath of fresh air. I've been arguing for a while that the corn market has been undervalued based on its own fundamentals, but it's been held down artificially by the soybean market and some of these other markets. But that veil of negativeness has been lifted somewhat here temporarily. So we need to be ready for this move higher and market a portion of your crop on these winter, do some winter sales. And if you feel like you need to adjust down the road, we take care of that at that time. But, it's doing nothing because there's this uncertainty out there is not the best plan of action. You know, there's always going to be uncertainty out there.
Okay,
so you're never going to know the size of your crop.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Okay, so let's just say, for example, that I wanted to establish a price floor because I feel like, you know, this isn't a horrible level, and I at least want to be capped here on the bottom side and have the potential to maybe gain some going forward. So give me an example or two of how I could potentially do that.
Yeah, that's something we're interested in doing. If we can get another push higher and next leg higher, we'll be talking a lot about setting some price floors. But let's use corn as the example. Right now, December corn's trading around $4. We think the top end of our value is closer to 420. So if we can get a push up into that 415 to 420 level, we'll be wanting to do some pricing at those price levels. But if you look at the December $4 puts, if we get to those prices, you can buy a $4 put for around 18 cents. And so you, when you buy that put, you give the you own the right to be short from $4, but you've paid 18 cents for that right. So your price floor becomes 382. Now, and so this is your insurance policy against something for dramatically sharply lower prices. It may not seem 382 is the most attractive price floor to set today, but by taking this action, it buys you some time. You can wait then for those rallies because you've set that price floor. It's not like you have to accept 382 as your final price. You're just setting an insurance. You're setting a price floor. You're going to get no worse than that. And you're still going to market either through the cash market or the futures market on rallies. So, and since some people will add to this strategy and sell a call option against that put, so if you sell a 450 call at 18 cents as a part of this combination, then you have no cost initially, and you've raised your price floor to $4. And now there is, if you sell a call option, there is going to be margin exposure on that. So that's something you'll have to monitor, and if the market goes against, you'll have to fund your account and meet those margin requirements. But price is moving higher because you sell a 450 call. That's really a good thing in the end. But setting a price floor is not necessarily saying this is the price that I'm going to get for my grain. It's setting an insurance policy to protect against what we don't know down the road. And you're going to continue to market as you need to. And you just peel out of those put options as you do either cashing it, or pricing in the cash market or futures market.
Yeah, and in your example then, you've effectively set a floor of 4 and a cap at 450. You know, that's really not a bad thing. So you've got 50 cents upside, but you've now limited your upside. But in exchange for that, you got rid of, I mean, because you sold that call, you got money back to go against what you spent on that put. Okay, so I've only got a minute left here, Scott. Just real quick, for farmers that are kind of struggling to pull the trigger on some early sales now, do you have any advice?
Well, a big part of marketing is managing your emotions, and you need to be proactive on as the markets work higher, so you're not reactive when they slide lower. So we, you know, just want to get people thinking about these early sale opportunities. You always have the opportunity through flexibility of futures and options to offset those down the road. If the market, you sell some, price some cash in the cash market or futures market this winter, and the market dips down into planting season, you think the market might take off in the summer, we can reopen the upside with call options. But it's important to take that first step, and because you can always adjust down the road, being proactive.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Really appreciate it. Again, that is Scott Harms. He's with Archer Financial Services and Grain PhD. You can go to grainphd.com to learn more. And just the big thing here is we just encourage all farmers to learn more about grain marketing. It's such a huge part of what we do every day. And like for me, my passion is raising crops and helping farmers raise crops. But we absolutely all, as farmers and people involved in agriculture, really need to pay attention to these markets. Hey, Scott, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Right after this break, we are finally going to get to corn soil insecticides. If you've got any questions about that or you'd like to talk about corn soil insecticides or anything going on in your farm, love to take your phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD, or send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call into our show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can send me an email, radio@agphd.com. So our main topic today is corn soil insecticides, and I'm going to go right to the phone lines now. We've got Chad calling in from down in Alabama. Chad, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. How y'all doing?
Excellent. So I got a few just general farm questions for you, but before I get to that, I'm curious, what do you do for the use of corn soil insecticides? Are you planting much continuous corn? Are you rotating? Are you using corn soil insecticides?
No, we rotate with a wheat and soybean double crop rotation, you know, and then come back with corn.
Yep.
So we don't have much trouble with it. Now, we will put out a insecticide if we're going to no-till. We'll put out an insecticide with a burn down, and you know, but for the most part, seed treatments and the burn down insecticide handle what we need to do.
Yeah, awesome. So how was this year for you with your different crops you raise?
Well, it was good. It was good. We're still trying to finish, you know. I'm combining soybeans right now, you know, trying to get this one wrapped up. But the corn crop was good. Probably the second best corn crop we've ever produced.
Awesome. Was there anything that really stood out to you this year management-wise in that corn crop? You know, any extra practices you did? Anything that really made a difference and stood out to you?
Well, you know, We down here in the South are still trying to understand fertility and all that part of it, you know, what works and don't work for us, you know. you know, our soil is not as good as y'all's is up there, but you know, we manage with it, you know. But you know, we use a lot of litter down here.
Yep.
And so, you know, our phosphorus is in pretty good shape, but it's still the sulfur. We just cannot get enough sulfur packed in, you know. So we're learning how to maintain that, and that's as much we've learned as much on that as we have anything.
Yeah, but when you mention sulfur, that is a leachable, and so here are my two questions for you in regards to that. First of all, what's your cation exchange capacity?
Well, I hadn't got anything in front of me with a cation numbers, you know.
Yeah, but let's put it this way: it's light soil, right?
Oh yes, yes. I mean, we're somewhere between a 5.8 to a 9, but for the most part, we'll average from a 7.68 to a 7.2.
Right, and I probably have less than 1% of my ground that's that low. So, yeah, it's just a lot different. And then
that's
rainfall,
right.
How much rainfall do you get on average in a normal year, would you say?
I would probably say 20, 30 inches, 40 inches, you know, something in that range. Like I said, I hadn't really on that. You know, we irrigate a lot of our ground, you know, and we when it ain't sticking to your feet, we water.
Yeah. Yep, and, you know, that's one of the big things, too, when people hear that we only get, in total, over a 12-month time period, normally 20 to 22 inches of precip,
mm-hmm.
And a fair amount of that is snow. People are like, how can you raise really good corn and beans? But we're so much cooler than you are down in Alabama.
That's right.
We can survive that. Whereas for you, yeah, if you're not putting water on that all the time, you're burning up, correct?
You know, I've got some pictures that where we've had the soil, we've been planting corn. Some of our last corn planted, say the 10th of May.
Yep.
And planting and finishing up planting corn.
Yep.
And soil at seed depth could be as high as 90 degrees. you know, and
yeah.
On top of the ground, it's a red soil, so it really, really takes in a lot of heat, you know. So on top of the ground, it could be 100, 110 degrees, you know.
Yeah, I mean, our soil never gets to 90 degrees, so yeah, it's just a whole different deal.
Some of it.
Yeah, when you talk May 10th, most years our soil temp is still below 50 degrees or right around 50 degrees, just depends on the year. Okay, so coming back to your sulfur issue, it to me is a little bit surprising because I would assume with that litter that you're putting on there, that's going to have at least some sulfur coming available every year. Is there just apparently isn't a whole lot of sulfur in that litter you're getting though, right?
Exactly. There's not a whole lot of sulfur in it. And again, you know, with litter, you know, you don't know when it's gonna break down. You know, so
good point.
And I mean when we're trying to maintain numbers, you know, when you're looking at numbers and you look and you say, well, I don't want a 10-to-1 ratio or whatever we want, you know, it's just very hard to maintain that is what I was getting at, you know, and we're figuring out the best way to treat it is multiple ways, you know, either it's in elemental sulfur in the fall or it's in, you know, we use all 28%. I don't have any ammonia, you know, anhydrous. So it's all liquid, you know.
Yep.
So it's just multiple ways to combat the situation.
So when you're irrigating, are you putting any fertilizer on at that time?
Yes. Yes, it's according to which stage the plant's in, but yes, we'll put on different treatments. We may put on potash or we'll put on, you know, some 28%, but it's just a really good way to spoon feed the plants, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just doing some research now trying to figure out what of that is actually getting. Am I getting, when I put out 10 gallons, am I getting 10 gallons worth? You know, what numbers, when you're putting out that much water, you know, if you irrigate with a half inch of water, you've heard Randy or David talk about maybe irrigating as fast as they can with a tenth or two of water.
Yep.
You know, does that affect the gallonage that you're putting out, you know? So, you know, it just gets deeper into questions, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, trying to be as precise as we can, yet we're dealing with millions of gallons of water. I get it.
Correct. You know, a half inch is 13,000 gallons to an acre.
Right.
You know, so it's you know, you wonder, can you burn anything? I've never burned a crop with any fertilizer through an irrigation system, which I've never, you know, as low as a quarter inch of water.
Yeah, so, no, you know, no. No, when you dilute it down that much, I'm really not worried. Where I worry is when guys want to spray over the top of the crop and they don't put a whole lot of water in the sprayer. Yeah. That's an entirely different deal. But I'm glad you said attacking it through a bunch of different means, like elemental sulfur, for example. Mm-hmm. That takes a little while to break down.
Yep.
You can use less expensive sources like gypsum, or a lot of people will use ammonium sulfate. There are many different ways to go. Liquid is going to be a little bit more expensive, but like in your case, it's pretty easy to get back out there when you're irrigating.
That's right. We haven't seen the return out of gypsum. You know, we haven't seen that return. You know, we haven't made it work like we think it should work and like theoretically it works. But the elemental sulfur has been the best, and we figured out at what pH it brings the pH down.
Yep.
You know, so I may attack it. If I'm going to put out 100 or 200 or 300 pounds, I may try to raise my pH, you know, a quarter to a half a point. And then
offset.
Know that the elemental sulfur is going to bring it back down.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about gypsum, it's one of the things we mention all the time. You got to look closely at what your costs are for any of these extra things you're going to throw out there, like gypsum or lime, for example, or for that matter, litter or manure. I mean, one guy will say, well, my gypsum is dirt cheap, and it's a good source of calcium and sulfur, and for that farmer, it's fantastic. And for the next guy, depending on what you're paying, maybe you're paying a lot more, and all you need it for is the sulfur, it might not be worth it. So, yeah, we always have to be evaluating the costs. I agree 100%.
That's like we can't really get our hands on dolomitic lime, and we have acidic lime. So it's, you know, we have problems in that aspect as well, you know, because the freight is so bad, I can't really, you know, I can't justify it.
Yep. You know? And that's, at the end of the day, what it all comes back to. I've got great agronomic advice for anybody, but we also have to enter the economics into the whole thing, too.
Got to make some money.
Yep, that's for sure. All right, well, hey, Chad, it's been great talking to you today. Really appreciate it, and best of luck as you're finishing up harvest down there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank
you. You bet. Thank you. By the way, that was Chad Henderson, and last year he was up at our Ag PhD field day, had one of the First Steps plots in there. We'd really encourage you, attend the Ag PhD field day. We get some fantastic farmers from around the country, like Chad Henderson, like Randy Dowdy, David Hula. Last year we had the highest yielding wheat producer in the world, the highest yielding barley producer in the world. Both of those guys are from New Zealand. And apparently they're going to make the trip all the way back over here again this coming year. They had such a great time last year. And we just really, really appreciate these people, these great farmers who are willing to come to our farm, have plots here. So not only will they speak to you that day, but they can show you things right out in the field and hopefully give you some good advice that can help you on your farm. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about corn, soil, insecticides next. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Thanks for tuning in today to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call in to talk about our topic, corn soil insecticides, or anything else going on in your farm, I'd love to take your phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can send me an email, radio@agphd.com. All right, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We've got Rich Porter on with us. He is with AMVAC. Rich, how you doing today?
Good. Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so here's my first question for you, Rich. We've had a lot of soil insecticides out for a long time that have been higher use rates, but I see one of the big things your company's been working on lately is these more concentrated products. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why you're doing that exactly?
Yes, I do that too. So the high concentrated such as Aztec HC and Smart Choice HC, what we wanted to do is just bring more convenience, make it easier for the growers so we don't have to load smart boxes as often. So with concentration.
Hey, Rich, I think we must have a bad connection. I'm going to put you on hold for just a second and have our producer, my sister Janelle, check that out with you real quick. So, he was just mentioning these HC or high concentrate formulations, and it is one of the big differences that we've seen here in agriculture is you start talking about farming quite a few acres, and we've got bigger planters. We have, even like on our own farm, we've now kind of combined some of our little fields and made them bigger fields. Well, when you're rolling along, you hate to have to stop. So it is pretty nice being able to go on more acres, and that's really the big thing. So I think that's what Rich was getting at there. But, you know, when you start looking at some of these dry products, we've seen more of a change in probably the last 5-10 years, people going to planters that don't necessarily have the dry boxes on there right away. You certainly can get those as an add-on at some point. The Smart Box system is really good. I really like that. That's a way to have the dry on there without having a lot of concern in terms of safety or anything else. And also, let me just say, with a lot of the insecticides that are on the market now today, they are the safer insecticides for human beings. I'm not going to say you want to take a bath in them or anything else, but I will say years ago, well, like when I was a young agronomist, you know the products we had to deal with? It was Thimet. That's pretty dangerous. We had Furadan, also pretty dangerous. Those are both off the market now. Diphenate, gone. Then you had Counter. Well, Counter, about the only way you're going to get it anymore is in a smart box type system. So those are really the four most dangerous ones that we had. Now you start talking about something like Force, for example. Well, that's a pyrethroid. I mean, Capture, pyrethroid. I mean, these come from the chrysanthemum flower. So again, you know, we've got to use personal protective equipment and be careful whenever we're using these products and use them according to the label. But I'm just trying to say, when something comes from a flower, that makes me feel an awful lot better. And when I look at the safety, the toxicity of these types of products, yep, they're still great at controlling insects, but just much safer for human beings. So that's a really, really big advantage. But then also, when I was a young agronomist, we didn't have things like these smart box systems. We didn't have even the lock and load system that came out when I was, after I'd been an agronomist for a few years. Just the type of handling devices, the packaging that we have, everything, it has been changing. And you look at how a lot of things are going just safer and safer and safer for all of us. So that's a great thing for farmers and even a great thing for those of us agronomists who farm on the side as well. All right, so we've got Rich Porter back on with us. Rich, sorry about that. Hopefully we got a little better connection there. So we talked just a little bit about why go to some of the higher concentrate formulations. Talk to us maybe about the difference between some of the choices of insecticides that AMVAC has. Why would I want to pick one versus the other?
Okay, Brian, first of all, am I coming through okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Okay, great. Yeah, so with the we started with the higher concentration formulations. That obviously is a convenience factor, loading less boxes. As far as picking, picking one over the other, really all these products are very effective on corn rootworm. Aztec, Smart Choice, Counter. What a grower might consider is with nematodes, Counter.
Yep.
Would be the choice for long-term corn-on-corn and nematode control.
Exactly.
So there's an option. And also, if there's a liquid or interest in a liquid option, we have Index, and that is fairly new on the market.
Your version of bifenthrin. But when we look at any of the liquid options, so I don't care if it's Force Evo, Capture LFR, Index, any of those choices, I have always found that the dries are have worked just a little bit better on rootworms. How do you guys feel about that now?
Just to clarify, on Index, actually, that is a combination product.
Yep, you're
with same components. But we found equivalent control to the granules with Index, at least in the last three, four years of trials. But as far as granules, they are proven over many years. And they are very effective products that we offer.
Yeah, sorry when you mentioned Index right away. I was thinking about your straight bifenthrin, but that's basically Index, if I remember right, that's the same ingredients as what Smart Choice is going to have?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yep, okay. So with Smart Choice, that's two different modes of action. Index, two different modes of action. Are you picking up something extra? Is it just nice having the two modes of action? I mean, why do you like having the Smart Choice and the index options?
Yeah, very, very good question. So any product, as you mentioned, Smart Choice, Aztec, two modes of action. The pyrethroid component is really doing mostly the seed pest, seed attacking pests. So things like wireworm, things like cutworm, grub, white grubs. That's what the pyrethroid is doing. The other, the organophosphate, is doing the major heavy lifting on corn rootworm. So you do get two modes of action on different pests, but, you know, they're not equal, I guess is the best way to put it.
All right, for a farmer who just bought a new planter, let's say in the last couple of years, doesn't have any delivery mechanism on there to deliver an insecticide, what would you suggest that farmer does if he wants to get something on there? How can they get in touch with you and get a smart box system or even get set up for liquid?
So the best way would be start with the retailer, and the retailer can contact our sales person, and then we'll put the grower directly in touch with our vendor, our supplier, who will set them up with a smart box. That's as far as the liquid part goes, we can also set them up with the correct vendor to get the equipment.
All right. And are you going to have programs again for 2019 to help farmers cover the cost on those systems?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. We have program. We have smart box programs with Index. It's a little different. It's just a program through, you know, delivered, I guess, through the product itself. So we'll have a program.
Okay. Any last comments for us, Rich? We've got about 30 seconds here.
No, just one quick comment. We've continued to see the benefits of using insecticides on traits, so we're continuing that work, and just want to let you know the value that's being delivered when we apply any insecticide, whether it's granular or liquid on top of traits.
All right, sounds good. Well, again, we've been talking to Rich Porter with AMVAC. Rich, thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You bet. All right, right after this break, we're going to talk just a little bit more about corn soil insecticides, and then we're going to get back to your questions again. If you've got any more questions for us or anything you'd like to talk about yet here on our show today, our number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can find me on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Brian Hefty. Well, stick around. We've got your questions coming up. And a little more on corn soil insecticides right after this.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free Grain Bridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
Thanks again for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Going to wrap things up on corn soil insecticides. You know, one of the things that Rich Porter was mentioning was using insecticides on traits. We've been big believers in that since day one when the traits came out. We continued to use soil insecticides, in part because the secondary pests, wireworms, grubs, seed corn maggots, seed corn beetles, and others. But then the flip side of it is just a protectant against resistance. And I was just thinking about how I was going to wrap things up here today. And when I thought about the resistant rootworms, it brought me back to the early 1990s when I first learned about BT corn before it was ever even on the market. So one of the entomologists that I spent a fair amount of time with when I was a young agronomist, a guy who at least trained me a little bit, his name is Ben Kantak. He was a longtime South Dakota State University entomologist, and then he eventually ended up working for some other companies down the road too, but super sharp, nationally known. He was great. But there were two things that he talked to me about that I just will always remember. He passed away last year. But anyway, one of them was that he said, Brian, BT isn't going to work long term. And I said, what do you mean it's not going to work? And he goes, well, we've had that same stuff for years. It's Dipel. And we've tried this before, he said, back in the 70s, and it didn't take very long, and we had some resistant bugs. I was a little surprised when he was partially right, but not entirely, because all they've done is they continue to change the BTs and come with multiple BTs. So at least on the corn borer side, we haven't really had the resistance issue that I thought we were going to end up with. Here we are over 20 years later. On the rootworm side, however, it only took a few years and there were resistant rootworms. So if you're only using single traited, so you only have one trait killing rootworms, good luck with that. That's where you absolutely have to have insecticide if you have rootworm pressure. So I would encourage you to find at least a couple rootworm traits that you're using in combination, something like SmartStax, for example, and then you've got a better shot of keeping that trait going for a little while, but resistance is coming if it's not already here. So that's where insecticide can really pay. And again, that's in the heavier pressure situations. The other thing, just as I was thinking about Ben Kantak here a little bit ago, it just reminded me the other thing he talked to me about was that still has stood out is that bringing beneficial insects in to kill other insects sounds like a fantastic idea. But he said, be awfully careful because it's happened many times in history where people bring in beneficial insects or what they view as beneficial insects, and all of a sudden they realize that's not a beneficial insect at all to another crop and for something else that they weren't planning on. So he said, if you're going to start changing nature, you know, it might work, but it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen. So anyway, I realize off topic, but I just thought I would throw that out there. I thought that was kind of interesting as I was thinking about Ben. All right, so on the corn soil insecticides, to wrap things up, I still am a bigger believer. If I've got super crazy heavy rootworm pressure, I would like to see you use a dry product like Force or Aztec. Those are the top two products. Now, like Rich was mentioning, if you've got nematodes also, Counter is the product to use. So that does have activity. Old Furidan was the other one that, you know, would have the nematode activity, but that's off the market today. So basically, you've got Counter. And I mean, Counter does pretty decent job on rootworms. I still think Force and Aztec are going to be better. But, you know, if you've got the other pests, Counter is a better choice. Also, I would say Counter is a little bit better choice for white grubs in my experience. And that's something that none of the BT products is going to help you with is grubs. So if you've had a grub problem or a neighbor's had a grub problem or you're right near some trees or you're taking CRP out, all these things, you got to look really hard at the grubs. They are a huge insect and they can really do a lot of damage in a short amount of time. Let's see, the last thing I guess I would throw out is when we look at the liquid insecticides, I really do like them. They're inexpensive, easy to deliver. You can mix with fertilizer in a lot of cases. It's just they're typically not quite as good on rootworms, but they are still really good. There is one other thing that I would throw out too, in-furrow band or T-band. Some products require you to go in-furrow. For safety reasons, they don't want anything left on the surface of the soil. Counter would be a good example of that, where I would really prefer to see you put that in furrow. if we're just talking overall insect control, like Force or Aztec, I like T-band. I've always liked T-band. What that is a little bit is on top and some gets down in furrow. So we just have more protection all around kind of in that root zone. All right, well, if you've got any more questions about corn soil insecticides, you can certainly send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Otherwise, I'm going to get to some more AgPhD mailbag questions here. The next one comes from Nick in Nebraska, and he says, in the past, we have put 1034-0 over the top of the row at 12 gallons per acre and banded 12 gallons of 32%. But this year, we put 5 gallons of 624-6 in furrow right on top of the seed and 12 gallons of a 50-50 blend of 32% and 1034-0 in what we would call a 2x2x2. Well, we farm in some variable soils, but we have some cation exchange capacities as low as 5 in spots, and we probably average 10 to 12. So what he's talking about here is relatively light to maybe medium soil. Well, anyway, he said, our corn this year was far better than we've ever raised, but where I left a starter fertilizer check, where one round I shut off the in-furrow pop-up, the corn was actually 7 bushels per acre better. The round where I left this check strip, the cation exchange capacity was about 10 to 14. Anyway, he says, now I'm wishing I would have left more check strips. Do you guys think that it was too much salt too close to the seed? Yes, Nick, I absolutely do. 624-6 at most in a 30-inch row, I'm probably going to put 2 gallons, maybe 3, and I'm also going to put more water with it. As I continue on reading here, he says, I'm working on a plan for next year, and I'm thinking maybe I should go back to 3 gallons of 624-6 and 2 gallons of water with it. What would you guys recommend? Well, first of all, I'm not a real big believer in high salt fertilizers. We've been using some agri-liquid stuff, and that's the reason why we got turned on to their stuff. I'd suggest maybe try some different fertilizer products in furrow and some different rates and see what you find. But the big thing I tell people all the time is, because I'll run into a lot of guys that do the same thing you do and say, well, it hasn't hurt me yet, and I've been doing it for a few years. Might not have hurt you yet, but sooner or later, it's going to hurt you. And you think about, okay, you spent the money on the 624-6 and 5 gallons of that, and you lost 7 bushels. So you spent money on one side and lost money on the other side. That's a bad deal all the way around. We can't have those situations, especially with our farm economy today. All right, his last question here is, also, do you have any recommendations of a good fertilizer blend for 2x2x2 applications? I'm looking to do maybe some zinc, possibly sulfur. What about micronutrients, manganese, boron, copper? The big thing, Nick, is we'd like to look at your soil tests. We have to be real careful when we start talking about banding certain nutrients like boron. We don't want to get too much too close to the root. Otherwise, you might burn roots off and things like that. But we want to see what your soil actually needs. Now, I'm just going to guess as a straight out guess here without looking at the soil test. Again, I want to see the soil test, send them to me, and I'll give you a better piece of advice. But anyway, I'm going to guess in your light soil, boron and sulfur are probably going to be limiting factors. I'm also going to guess when we talk zinc, if you've got any erodible hills or anything like that, that's where we might be running into a problem there. All right, well, thanks again for the question, Nick. Really appreciate it. Okay, let's see. I got a couple more quick ones here. One from Mike. He said, good day, guys. Thanks for your YouTube videos. Nicely explained. I learned something. Keep up the good work. Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate that. Next one is from James. He says, you say drain tile, but then you show PVC plastic. How long do you think plastic tube will last buried? Well, a lot of times, James will tell people 50 years. It's possible it might not last that long, but it's also certainly possible that it might last 100 years. So a lot of these things, you got to think about where they're at in the soil. We're putting them down 3, 4, 5 feet deep. They are going to sit there for a really long time. And so when we talk about drain tile, it's such a long-term investment. We want to get the tile installed correctly. And yes, I realize it probably shouldn't be called tile anymore when it's plastic, but that's just how it's always been referred to. So that's what we continue to say as farmers and as agronomists. All right, well, before we go, I just want to say thanks a lot to our production staff. Great job, as always. My sister Janelle's on the other side of the glass today. Thanks to all our guests who called in today, and thanks to everybody who sent in questions as well. We really, really appreciate those. And any day you've got questions, just feel free to call us, email us. Love to take your phone call, love to take your email. Well, thanks a lot for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. And now, stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio.